Athenseum, 1848-833. That at the meeting of the British Association, 1848, Sir W. S. Harris said that he had recorded an account sent to him of a vessel toward which had whirled two wheels of fire, which the men described as rolling millstones of fire. When they came near, an awful crash took place, the topmasts were shivered to pieces. It is said that there was a strong sulfurous odor. 22. Journal of the Royal Meteorological Society, 1-157. Extract from the log of the Bark Lady of the Lake, by Captain F. W. Banner. Communicated by R. H. Scott, F.R.S. That, upon the 22nd of March, 1870, at LAT 5 degrees 47 minutes N, long 27 degrees 52 minutes W, the sailors of the Lady of the Lake saw a remarkable object, or cloud, in the sky. They reported to the captain. According to Capt. Banner, it was a cloud of circular form, with an included semicircle divided into four parts, the central dividing shaft beginning at the center of the circle and extending far outward, and then curving backward. Geometricity and complexity and stability of form, and the small likelihood of a cloud maintaining such diversity of features, to say nothing of appearance of organic form. The thing traveled from a point at about 20 degrees above the horizon to a point about 80 degrees above. Then it settled down to the northeast, having appeared from the south, southeast. Light gray in color, or it was cloud color. It was much lower than the other clouds. And this datum stands out. That, whatever it may have been, it traveled against the wind. It came up obliquely against the wind, and finally settled down right in the wind's eye. For half an hour this form was visible. When it did finally disappear, that was not because it disintegrated like a cloud, but because it was lost to sight in the evening darkness. Capt. Banner draws the following diagram. 23. Textbooks tell us that the Dhurmsalla meteorites were picked up soon, or within half an hour. Given a little time, the conventionalists may argue that these stones were hot when they fell, but that their great interior coldness had overcome the molten state of their surfaces. According to the Deputy Commissioner of Dhurmsalla, these stones had been picked up immediately by passing coolies. These stones were so cold that they benumbed the fingers. But they had fallen with a great light. It is described as a flame of fire about 2 feet in depth and 9 feet in length. Acceptably, this light was not the light of molten matter. In this chapter we are very intermediatistic and unsatisfactory. To the intermediatist there is but one answer to all questions. Sometimes and sometimes not. Another form of this intermediatist solution of all problems is yes and no. Everything that is, also isn't. A positivist attempts to formulate, so does the intermediatist, but with less rigorousness, he accepts but also denies, he may seem to accept in one respect and deny in some other respect, but no real line can be drawn between any two aspects of anything. The intermediatist accepts that which seems to correlate with something that he has accepted as a dominant. The positivist correlates with a belief. In the Dhurmsalla meteorites we have support for our expression that things entering this Earth's atmosphere sometimes shine with a light that is not the light of incandescence, or so we account, or offer an expression upon, thunderstones, or carved stones that have fallen luminously to this Earth, in streaks that have looked like strokes of lightning, but we accept, also, that some things that have entered this Earth's atmosphere, disintegrate with the intensity of flame and molten matter, but some things, we accept, enter this Earth's atmosphere and collapse non-luminously, quite like deep-sea fishes brought to the surface of the ocean. Whatever agreement we have is an indication that somewhere aloft there is a medium denser than this Earth's atmosphere. I suppose our stronghold is in that such is not popular belief. Or the rhythm of all phenomena. Air dense at sea level upon this earth less and less dense as one ascends, then denser and denser. A good many bothersome questions arise. Our attitude. Here are the data. Luminous rains sometimes fall, Nature, March 9, 1882, Nature, 25 to 437. This is light that is not the light of incandescence, but no one can say that these occasional, or rare, rains come from this Earth's externality. We simply note cold light of falling bodies. For luminous rain, snow, and dust, see Hartwig, Aerial World, p. 319. As to luminous clouds, we have more nearly definite observations and opinions, they mark transition between the old dominant and the new dominant. We have already noted the transition in Professor Schwedoff's theory of external origin of some hailstones and the implications that, to a former generation, seemed so preposterous droll was the word that there are in interplanetary regions volumes of water whether they have fishes and frogs in them or not. Now our acceptance is that clouds sometimes come from external regions, having had origin from supergeographical lakes and oceans that we shall not attempt to chart, just at present only suggesting to enterprising aviators, and we note that we put it all up to them, and show no inclination to go Columbusing on our own account, that they take bathing suits, or, rather, deep-sea diving suits along. So then that some clouds come from interplanetary oceans of the Super Sargasso Sea, if we still accept the Super Sargasso Sea and shine, upon entering this Earth's atmosphere. In Himmel und Erde, February, 1889, a phenomenon of transition of 30 years ago, Herr O. Jesse, in his observations upon luminous night clouds, notes the great height of them, and drolly or sensibly suggests that some of them may have come from regions external to this Earth. I suppose he means only from other planets. But it's a very droll and sensible idea either way. In general, I am accounting for a great deal of this Earth's isolation, that it is relatively isolated by circumstances that are similar to the circumstances that make for relative isolation of the bottom of the ocean, except that there is a clumsiness of analogy now. To call ourselves deep sea fishes has been convenient, but, in a quasi-existence, there is no convenience that will not sooner or later turn awkward, so, if there be denser regions aloft, these regions should now be regarded as analogues of far submerged oceanic regions, and things coming to this Earth would be like things rising to an attenuated medium and exploding sometimes incandescently, sometimes with cold light, sometimes non-luminously, like deep sea fishes brought to the surface. Altogether conditions of inhospitality. I have a suspicion that, in their own depths, deep sea fishes are not luminous. If they are, Darwinism is mere Jesuitism, in attempting to correlate them. Such advertising would so attract attention that all advantages would be more than offset. Darwinism is largely a doctrine of concealment, here we have brazen proclamation if accepted. Fishes in the mammoth cave need no light to see by. We might have an expression that deep sea fishes turn luminous upon entering a less dense medium, but models in the American Museum of Natural History, specialized organs of luminosity upon these models. Of course we do remember that awfully convincing dodo, and some of our sophistications we trace to him. At any rate, disruption is regarded as a phenomenon of coming from a dense to a less dense medium. An account by M.A.C.H. Arius, in the Transactions of the Swedish Academy of Sciences, 1808-215, translated for the North American Review, 3-319. That M.A.C.H. Arius, having heard of an extraordinary and probably hitherto unseen phenomenon, reported from near the town of Skaninge, Sweden, investigated that, upon the 16th of May, 1808, at about 4 p.m., the sun suddenly turned dull brick red. At the same time there appeared, upon the western horizon, a great number of round bodies, dark brown and seemingly the size of a hat crown. They passed overhead and disappeared in the eastern horizon. Tremendous procession. It lasted 2 hours. Occasionally one fell to the ground. When the place of a fall was examined, there was found a film, which soon dried and vanished. Often, when approaching the sun, these bodies seemed to link together, or were then seen to be linked together, in groups not exceeding 8, and, under the sun, they were seen to have tails 3 or 4 fathoms long. Away from the sun the tails were invisible. Whatever their substance may have been, it is described as gelatinous, soapy and jellied. I place this datum here for several reasons. It would have been a good climax to our expression upon hordes of small bodies that, in our acceptance, were not seeds, nor birds, nor ice crystals, but the tendency would have been to jump to the homogeneous conclusion that all our data in that expression related to this one kind of phenomena, whereas we conceive of infinite heterogeneity of the external, of crusaders and rabbles and emigrants and tourists and dragons and things like gelatinous hat crowns. Or that all things, here, upon this earth, that flock together, are not necessarily sheep, Presbyterians, gangsters, or porpoises. The datum is important to us, here, as indication of disruption in this earth's atmosphere, dangers in entering this earth's atmosphere. I think, myself, that thousands of objects have been seen to fall from aloft, and have exploded luminously, and have been called ball lightning. As to what ball lightning is, we have not yet begun to make intelligent guesses. Monthly Weather Review, 34-17. In general, it seems to me that when we encounter the opposition ball lightning we should pay little attention, but confine ourselves to guesses that are at least intelligent, that stand phantom-like in our way. We note here that in some of our acceptances upon intelligence we should more clearly have pointed out that they were upon the intelligent as opposed to the instinctive. In the Monthly Weather Review, 33-409, there is an account of ball lightning that struck a tree. It made a dent such as a falling object would make. Some other time I shall collect instances of ball lightning, to express that they are instances of objects that have fallen from the sky, luminously, exploding terrifically. So bewildered is the old orthodoxy by these phenomena that many scientists have either denied ball lightning or have considered it very doubtful. I refer to Dr. Sestier's list of 150 instances, which he considered authentic.